permanently deprived. If I take someone's coat and I'm drunk and I didn't have the intent to permanently deprive, I am not guilty of theft. That is an elementary principle of criminal law.
So the point is, Larry, is that
you're guilty of something else.
Claiming you're drunk doesn't get you off, but it gets you off from a felony, or from a life to
felony. Yeah, in the murder situation, it gets you from... No, that's not true. It gets you, because arguably we've covered it now as second-degree murder.
Yeah.
So it gets you, it still gets you a maximum of life, it just lowers the minimum down. It's important that the way we redefine intoxication now, it substantially restricts the defense in terms of the initial proposal. It substantially restricts the defense as compared to every other state that I'm aware of that has a revised code. It is the most restrictive minor formulation of the intoxication doctrine that I'm aware of.
It's the most restrictive
formulation of the defense. That is, the defense is available less under this than in any other jurisdiction.
Yeah, under the revised codes. I'll show you if you want. I'll show you Hawaii, which says it's even a defense to manslaughter.
It's a defense to manslaughter?
Yes.
Hawaii?
Yes, you just can. Yes, that's correct. And no, but it's correct. This is the correct way to approach it. It really is. This is essentially what existing law does.
But the statute that you gave me, I was amazed by the guess.
Well, how terrible they treated it, right? Yeah, I know.
They seem to think that...
It's nothing.
Yeah, if you're drunk, forget it. That's okay.
Yeah, right. If you're drunk, it's okay. But if you're
well, certainly
not drunk,
it's
okay.
Something like this, because clearly Alaskans know more about booze than anybody else in the country anyway, and we know that it's a foolish thing to use
that. The key word here is voluntarily. If you voluntarily place yourself in this condition, you should have to pay some of the consequences.
Yes, that's correct. You will pay some of the consequences, but it won't be the most serious. Because we say, for example, assault. We say first degree assault is intent to cause serious physical injury to cause serious physical injury. That's the mayhem example. Okay. Well, so you're not guilty of that, but you're guilty of another form of first degree assault, which says you intentionally perform an act which results in serious physical injury to another person under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to value in life. There you've got him. Because you made that determination, and that's what it's going to be. In other words, in the assault situation, he's guilty. In this, you know, because of serious physical injuries, he's not guilty.
I understand. I move the
I think I'm in favor of the amendment.
Well, let me point out the other thing.
We're going so fast, I keep trying to quite read where it's getting inserted.
Yeah, let me point out just the other things it does. It goes to what it does also, it goes back to our definitions of the four mental states, and what it does on page 92, line 12 and a half, it adds, hold on a second, something's a little wrong here. Oh, no, I'm sorry, no, it isn't. Okay, originally, as drafted, intoxication was a defense to knowing. Now we'd say, in a person who is unaware of conduct or circumstances of which he would have been aware had he not been intoxicated from the use of alcohol or drugs, acts knowingly with respect to that conduct or circumstance. Restricted right there by that amendment. Okay, recklessly, I just restructured it because previously we said had not been intoxicated or using drugs on line 20 or 21 of the committee substitute. Now we simply say intoxicated. We define intoxicated as drug use or alcohol. And then if you go to page 19, line 19 of the amendment, you see that we've redefined intentionally. And we say a person acts intentionally with respect to a result described by a provision of law when its conscious objective is to cause that result. Originally said you could act intentionally with respect to conduct or results. The effect of the amendment is to say that all conduct is engaged knowingly. Okay, and the reason you do that...
Oh, and intentionally is the highest level.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what we've got to? We've got to say now that intentional in the code is specific intent. That's what exactly it is.
It's intentional. It's intentional, knowing, reckless, and criminal negligence. That's the hierarchy.
Yes, yeah. And it'll be much easier to explain this to a person that's really resisting law. Say you use intent when you're talking about intent to do a specific result. Knowing is the conduct and the circumstances. And,
Mr. Chairman, I think this is all right. The problem is that it's one of those general provisions. It just applies absolutely everywhere. I'm going to move it, but I would still, I don't know if Barry's shown it to some other people.
No, I'm not. I'm going to obviously go to McKenzie and still let Neil have some thoughts about it.
Yeah, and, you know, circulate around a little bit and make sure we're... just to a few people. And just make sure we're not doing inadvertently doing something other than what we think we're doing.
I will. Yeah, I'm just going to try to stand, but...
So on that basis, assuming that somebody will be used as a cross-check to make sure we're not doing something inadvertent, I will move the
X prime.
Move X prime.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
There's
any objection?
There is
no objection to amendment to document.
I just want to say that I view the intent of that amendment to make it consistent with existing law. And as a result, and you have to change certain provisions of the code. Okay, E prime, that's a technical change. Remember we had serious provocation and was, you know, other than a person who's intoxicated. I just wanted to bring that back to you and show it to you. Line 6 of the amendment, we say a reasonable person other than one who's intoxicated.
Oh, okay.
And then we define intoxication in general definitions as intoxicated from the use of a drug or alcohol. Then we define drug as a controlled substance.
Okay, because originally it was clumsily drafted with sober or something.
Somebody
move
this, we adopted this.
E prime,
I'll move it. Most E prime has been moved. There's no objection to amendments adopted.
Let me give out the revised text stuff. Are we going to do it?
Why don't you hand it out and then let us work?
Why don't we hand it out?
And,
oh, yeah.
No. Okay, we won't go through it.
But we'll have it to look at overnight.
Yeah. Good.
Now, this doesn't change the D6 voter statute or the contributing statute. Those remain the same. It's just the sexual assault provision.
I forgot
what we did. Well, we didn't.
Give me one for a while. What happened?
Okay, we'll adjourn the meeting.
House Judiciary Committee meeting, March
shouldn't say that. And I don't have a letter. I think you actually have a letter from, do you remember Bill Larry? He had a letter in the window on the news from the government. He said this is due to that, that court case, you know, over whether we had, who we had power to confirm. The legislature passed that bill that we would be confirmed deputy commissioner and division director. And we lost the two. And the Supreme Court very strictly interpreted who we had the power to confirm. The answer was by the Attorney General last year that we did not have the authority to confirm the people that were any kind of instrument or agency or whatever that was set up to administer a criminal from, that we did not have authority to approve them.
The only thing is, one question I still have not submitted that we, or my unfortunately, I see on the second statement article, and I'm very sad, I haven't got that in our case, and we'll go to the court. You do permit on it, right? When you say, hey, you know, we have a,
the renewable resource fund was established by statute, the Attorney Hogg's bill passed in 1973. And there's a fund, there's two funds. There is a renewable resource development fund and a renewable resource permanent fund. And so there's actually two renewable resource funds, but it's the same money. What happens is if the money is not spent annually out of the development fund, it lapses into a so-called renewable resource permanent fund. And then it can't be spent. Only the interest in it. So we fiddled around with that language. Well, it's like this. We were, there is an opinion from the Attorney General that says that we can't speak. And there was an opinion at the time when it was passed in 1953, and the non-voter was Attorney General in 2. But the Renewable Resource Fund doesn't take money from seven taxes. It takes royalties. And it also has to be subject to appropriation by the legislature. So it's different than the permanent fund in that sense. No money can be spent out of the Renewable Resource Fund unless it's gone through the appropriation process. So they therefore interpreted that as being different animal than the permanent fund. In the House proposal, we were going to set up a that would be very similar to what we did with the permanent fund preparation, having a board of trustees. And we didn't able us to confirm those, that board of trustees do it, as well as board of trustees from the permanent fund. If you want to wait, then
I don't know why I'm waiting far, but I know we're changing the Constitution for both of them.
I just want to bring it up.
Like something more lessening before you, without even hearing from the administration.
Why don't we actually schedule it for maybe early next week? We'll schedule it for Monday. I'm favorably disposed for it, but I think it's something I have to talk about. Who do you want to hear from, the Attorney General?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Let's set this aside on Monday.
I think I'm blessing the okay, there's only one problem I guess Larry and Fred spoke yesterday about. I'm at page 74.
Page 74 is the
committee proposing the on 2-5. Well, we thought something like necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection.
Why would also we want the word sporting and have the language of that? Or other activities that necessary?
Well, I'm afraid. I think you got the outdoor.
I didn't cross out outdoor.
Okay. That other outdoor activity that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon. I don't think it has to, well, the next thing about the carrying of a concealed weapon for personal protection.
Necessarily involved.
I'm not sure you want to say concealed.
But yeah, it says concealed elsewhere, and that's what you're saying in the prosecution. They want to answer to that.
That necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. I would get. I mean, we're trying to deal with the problem.
Is there a suggestion to deal with the problem that I guess Larry and I were
May I make a suggestion? If you are going to go this route, this necessarily involves the carrying for weapon for personal protection, I suggest that you change it from a defense to an affirmative defense. I think you should put the burden on the defendant to establish that. Instead of having the burden on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person did not carry it for personal protection. The reason I'm saying this is because if we go with this amendment, we probably will have the most expanded defense of the CCW of any state that I'm aware of. Okay, but what about the kind of having a different affirmative defense?
I think that the situation now is that the cops are not going to bust people, innocent people, or steal weapons. But people feel that they don't really have the right to perform it because the law is different.
Yeah, but I mean,
the police are not busting hunters and fishermen and trappers and snowmobilers and stuff. But those people want to feel that, and rightly so, that they're not violating the law. So what we're trying to do is make them legal, but at the same time not make it hard to prosecute criminals or people that don't see.
They aren't enjoying it. Word lawful before outdoor.
delete the word 40, and then after activity, the language there that doesn't necessarily involve the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. And then also, I think there should be commentary to section very explaining section 10 that was, you know, they were trying to cover the elastic situation.
Exactly.
People go outdoors with them to protect themselves with their. I'm not trying to let people run around and dance with them.
First of all, in a prosecution under the section, in many of the cases, the only thing that's being prosecuted is the carrying of a concealed weapon, not a violent act or the use of the weapon. So that's what we're talking about. And secondly, here, again, we've got the situation that the chairman opposed the amendment, the prosecution to the CCW has to come forward with the evidence and prove to the jury beyond the, prove to the jury by a preponderance of the evidence that they were involved in a lawful outdoor activity that necessarily involved the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. Now, how many juries are going to buy some of the arguments where it would be the improper action or the unreasonable way of carrying a gun? In almost all cases, it's going to be interpreted to apply only to the rural areas, and even then, when it really seems to be necessary, it may be a jury question. And you're going to have an Alaska jury that understands the concern that you've got about everybody having a gun, but also understands the Alaskan experience. We're not arming anybody. They're already armed. I don't know anybody who goes out in the bush for more than 1 or 2 days on the head has some kind of armament, and usually because of the circumstances, they carry a concealed weapon, but you can carry it that way. Yeah, well, that's what I was talking about. Lawful, outdoor, activity.
And I think that what we get is
fairly involved the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. That is, you've got one, two, three elements that have to be proved to the jury by a preponderance of the evidence. That the activity was lawful, that it necessarily involved the carrying of the weapon, and that it was an outdoor activity. Otherwise, the jury won't buy the defense, and you're guilty of CCW.
Yeah,
that's
okay. In a prosecution under A1 or 2 of this section, it is an affirmative defense that the defendant, at the time of his possession, is in his dwelling or is engaged in lawful hunting, fishing, trapping, or other lawful outdoor activity that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal purpose.
I couldn't agree with how his property
was the property we have dwelling.
We did have that.
Yeah, we did, but the problem was that what it would authorize is that every that was the problem with every bar owner could carry a concealed weapon.
Not an earlier draft, because they could.
Oh, right, and then you decided not, then you decided to change that.
No, I sure didn't.
Well, you weren't here then.
No. Very well.
You didn't have anybody against the bar, carrying
a weapon.
Could steal it.
Could steal it.
Oh, no, the only thing we said was that you couldn't carry around a concealed weapon on, that they could have one behind the bar.
Right, I mean,
the argument.
Yeah. Well, then it's not concealed. Under those situations,
that was the whole point, right? The employee is not even guilty because he's sitting there.
It has to do with arms.
Behind the bar, but we didn't say people could arm themselves.
Well, what happened to the original way in which the bill was written? It said that it was all right. I thought that was fine.
Said what?
The original 651.
No, I don't know. This is the way it was.
Yeah. I know specifically that there was a motion to exclude the on the premises.
Well, technically, I'm not sure. I support
The whole point is the only reason we're going to cover bars anyway is if people have guns behind bars. So we're going to cover them because that's what's happening anyway. We didn't want to start arming the bars.
Larry may also be confused in the sense that that bar problem is specifically addressed on line 6 through 8 in terms of possession and bar. We say you can do that. You simply can't carry a concealed. I mean, and that is, I don't think any, if the original proposal did allow that, I think every law of testimony would have was that it was a mistake. And there was a specific vote on that. I recall that.
Well,
I'd like to stick to the amendment that we have before us.
Yeah.
And if you want to bring up something else, you can. Is there any more debate on the amendment?
Well,
say you, you know, the only time we say you can't possess it in the store is when it's, when it's in the bar, and then we say you can possess it. We have a specific defense to that. We allow possession, possessing by property owners, and people say you can't carry concealed.
That's the main reason you want to conceal a weapon in the store. Other people won't really have it.
Not really. What if I lease my premises and people come on for a certain purpose, and because I, like, it's a carnival or something, and it's on my property, and I'm walking around with concealed weapons?
The thing that bothers me about Mr. Carpenter's amendment is that on his property can also mean that if somebody owns 900 apartment houses or something like that, you can carry a concealed weapon in any one of them. But the language of it as it's written now, I think, is too limited. I would think that if it's property of persons who are relating to his own dwelling, that, you know, as it's written right now, if you're inside your own house, it's legal to take one step outside your house and stand on the porch. You know, it's illegal, and you're technically guilty of carrying a concealed weapon. And on his property, I think it's a little too broad, because then you're dealing with somebody who can have all kinds of property for business and other purposes. It's not his own dwelling place or something like that. So
they don't have another word, though, on their existence, and you know, just kind of put another phrase in there. But the only thing I'm objecting to is the fact that I don't like to see government tell a guy what he's doing his own property.
Well, no.
I realize he can do it even though it's a long and outdoor activity, even if he's in his yard. But
I think Fred's amendment, I mean, Fred's just suggested change to your amendment. I think it certainly expands the right, and it says you can do it on the land that's outside your house.
If you said it is dwelling on the property,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, that's a bad
ad. Yeah, I'm trying to get
to. Well, you're starting to sound like a lawyer there, Steve.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm satisfied.
I think that's well for the property.
I don't think that'll take care of the guys who have their seedlings buried in the yard.
Oh, yeah, Manly Hot Bricks.
Now they have to dig them all out.
Okay,
Larry,
is that your proposed amendment?
Or property after
change?
I was willing.
That's my proposed amendment.
Okay, I was the maker of this motion.
As
the maker of the vision motion, I'll accept that amendment. Does everybody understand the amendment now?
Okay. When it comes back after it's been all glued together, I'd like to see it to make sure.
Can you read the whole thing as amended?
In a prosecution under A1 or A2 of this section, it is an affirmative defense of the defendant at the time of possession is in its dwelling or on property pertinent to the dwelling or is engaged in lawful hunting, fishing, trapping, or other lawful outdoor sporting activity. Outdoor activity that necessarily involves the carry of a weapon for personal protection. That will be broken down by several
terms.
Play with when it gets slow.
So you get my sword? That's how we got most of the amendments. Is this one that's written so well, we can just put it up or down, you know?
Oh, it has a going back to the
mail. Oh, Jesus.
I just think we have saved you from the trial we have to go through all of it. We've sent them through the great filter system.
You filtered many of them for even one of us.
Well, we divided them up into things that were technical amendments, and then some that looked like good additions to our bill, the things that we may have not have covered, you know, things that, and then the other things that would be like exactly the opposite that the committee has already decided on, things like that, we have just left those. And so you have a copy of Mr. Hickey's original letter. And it's coded on the side, so you can see what we did with it. So you got all the basic information, but we kind of divided it up in a way that we can go through one group and then another.
Signed by Av Gross, Dan Hickey, and Ann Carpenetti. I'm pretty intimidating.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I was... We're on record? Okay. I had a discussion with Mr. Stern earlier, and I'm not sure of the exact parliamentary procedure on it, so I think perhaps we ought to put on the record what we're doing. We took the draft that the committee gave us about a week or 10 days ago, and Mr. Stern then proceeded to do a cleanup of that language cleanup. Then we, which resulted in another draft, which the committee did not see. Then we took it to this little ad hoc committee of myself, Mr. Stern, Mr. Gardner, the Attorney General, Dan Hickey, and Mark Rubenstein, and we went through it, came up with some more technical changes, and then took what we considered the technical recommendations from the Department of Law and plugged them in, and that is the draft you have before you.
I got two things here, which is good.
You have a draft, and then you should have an amendment.
Okay, the draft is the one that just starts out declaration.
Section 1, yeah, declaration 2. Okay, now, as far as I'm concerned, the draft has only two substantive changes in it that the committee, I believe, should sign off on before the markup vehicle amendment. In other words, I'm concerned about the fact that the committee didn't sign off on it, you know, keep down the road sometime if there was ever a question as to the validity of the amendment. And that would be in on page, page 11 of the bill. Beginning on line 18, where it says a prior felony conviction, then you go down to line 20, in the bill that the committee signed off on about 10 days ago, instead of less serious class of offense, the language only said less serious class, and it wasn't another offense. Now, I'm not sure whether that's a substantive change or not.
I don't know. I don't think it is.
Well, I can't give you the reason why it should be, but I'll give you a reason why I'm concerned, because Amendment number 2, the First Amendment, is talk about the classification of offenses, and that's a substantial change. What in the ad hoc committee, we got into this problem of how do you define what a class of offense was when it was not classified by prior law was in another state. In other words, what was assault with a dangerous weapon. So instead of sticking with class, we decided to do a class offense, and then with amendment number 2, we define what an eighth felony is on a drive term.
To avoid litigation.
Mr.
Chairman, I don't think that's a substantive change.
I wouldn't
anticipate an amendment we haven't passed yet, but class of offense, I think that's all right.
Does anybody have any problem with that thing for the page 11 line 20? We'll get to that amendment number 2.
off the record tonight. You got a serious problem here.
Coffee break?
Yeah. Your draft is missing about a page and a half. How am I going to get Larry, you got a page down?
Okay, we're back on the record again for
only me, man.
Okay.
Okay, as long as that's on the record and as long as the committee knows about it, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
And I think it's covered as far as any possible problems that may arise in the future.
Well, we did agree that that doesn't succeed.
I asked and nobody objected to that.
Okay.
So I assume you can approve that.
So should I just go right into the amendment?
Well, yeah, why don't we go to amendment number two?
Okay. Amendment one, I just discarded because I blended into amendment two. If you recall, and
I did, are we going to say amendment two? I got one here because amendment two was on by amendment two.
Well, let me explain what this letter does. I went through the letter and I went, a brief suggestion I put down whether I incorporate it into amendment, whether I incorporate it into the technical markup, or whether I discard it. So it just says technical no, amendment number four, technical no. That's the
no means
that I asked the chairman, and the chairman said unless the committee decided to bring it up that we would not consider it.
What I did was put in the three categories. First, we got technical, we put those in the draft. It didn't change the substance of anything. The second category was amendments that looked like things that we either hadn't covered or the committee would probably feel that they were better. And then the third category were things that we'd already covered or gone the other way on. And so I wanted to go through the technical first, these amendments here, because I think probably the committee will like these. And then we can go into those, then we can go to the other ones.
Keeping in the spirit of the way he handled the sentencing from the beginning, when you ask him to come back to technical amendments, he always tries to sneak in a few zingers. So the zingers were marked no, and then the committee wants to bring them up.
The letter was all technical amendments.
Yeah. So are we ready?
So when we say amendment two, we're going on.
We're coming off the sheet of amendments.
Which are taken from Mr. Hickey's letter.
All the amendments aren't taken, well, most of them, but there are a couple of changes to his recommendations, and I'll point those out as we go along. Okay, a classification of offenses, amendment number two. When we were discussing this with the Attorney General and Mr. Rubenstein, we started getting concerned about the following problem. A person has either been convicted of a prior felony in Alaska, and it was not a classified felony at the time, or a person is convicted of a crime in another state that is a felony in another state, but they do not have classification. They're anywhere similar to ours. So we start getting concerned about the fact of what, now that we're going to have aggravating and mitigating circumstances that depend upon whether the prior felony was a more serious offense or a less serious offense, what would that lead to litigation and to opening up the record of the prior judgment of what, to find out whether that was a classification of offense that was similar to the Class A, Class B, or Class C felony. So in order to alleviate that problem, Mr. Hickey and the Attorney General suggested that, which everyone else thought was a good idea, that we define what a Class A, Class B, Class C felony. As long as we're doing that, we define what Class A and Class B misdemeanors were and the violations. And then subsections B and C of the amendment were already signed off by the committee under designation of offenses in a different section. And we're merging together into one section and propose that as an amendment to Title 11 and not to Title 12.
I heard everything except about the last sentence.
Well, subsections B and C of this proposed amendment were in, had already been signed off by the committee in the previous draft in a different section. Basically, it says a felony not defined is a C felony and a misdemeanor not defined is a B misdemeanor. That was, so I merged that into this amendment, stick it into Title 11. If that's
I think it might not have done what you intended to do.
Well,
maybe that's what Ed was responding to. That is, we could read a felony defined outside this title and so forth.
guideline for determining prior offenses before the effective date of the act or from other jurisdiction.
Well, part here, the B and C had already been signed off by the committee and probably just an inspection called designation of offenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It didn't have anything to do with
well, whether it's your mistake problem. Or it's our mistake,
yeah.
Mistake.
So, I mean, they can be correct.
His older brother fell a lot.
amendment number three, probably the amendment that's going to take the most discussion by this committee. This was suggested by the Department of Law. I believe, if you may remember, we had a discussion about whether the constitutional provision in Alaska created some problems for the Declaration of Purpose. Department of Law suggested that it be taken out. I can't give you a decision on whether it's constitutional.
My own feeling on it is that the way you set up the number of sentencing, the specific provisions you'll see later on in the amendments about that you can't suspend bias, you can't FIS the person.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not taking it out, just asking for it. Mm-hmm. I think that the amendment is very important. Yeah, I agree.
No, the Attorney General suggested the amendment.
I agree with the Attorney General.
The Attorney is moving it to that way you're not saying that a certain factor that is contrary to what's in the Constitution is given primary weight over the other factors.
But the important thing, of course, is that what we say, though, is that you must, for second offenders, you must be sentenced to presumptive term.
We're arguing, of course, that that has to be in it somewhere. The word anywhere.
We're saying that I'm saying that
and I think
Attorney General, if you do it the way it was originally drafted, you're just asking.
Yeah, the stuff that the dangerous language constitutionally is the word give primary race to weight to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean important constitution,
what the purpose of the administration shall be.
That's where the question is. I'm not very raised with issue last time. Maybe it's not.
I know it was also raised. I raised the question when Bucci were and Ruben Sykes and the Joker were going to the Supreme Court last year. And other people have brought it up all along.
The purpose of the penal administration shall be on the reformation of
Henry
I
did a memo on this for Senator Sackett on a completely unrelated subject to this. And
it can't work for every legislator there is.
And there were several comments made on the floor of the convention at the time when they moved this section. One by Ralph Rivers, and they referred to more than just penal administration. They also referred to sort of an interest in sentencing practice.
Article 1, Section 12.
So that, to me, if it was strictly dedicated to penal administration, it would be a pretty strong argument that a sentencing bill would not be unconstitutional. But by the language of the delegates on the floor of the convention, I think it might give us a question of constitutionality.
Yeah.
But then the Attorney General seems to feel more strong than I do that it might be unconstitutional as they're written now, and therefore the amendment is appropriate.
Now, the one way of looking at it, I just think it's drafting this way doesn't change the purpose clause that much from my point of view, and if anything, it does strengthen it because we're in country, but just playing in the safe side.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire if staff considered, if this committee considered actually putting in the constitutional language in this Declaration of Purpose section?
I didn't consider that, no.
Penal administration should be based on the principle of reformation and upon the
Republic.
If we were to put it in a legislative finding and just include it there, but then have the, then you would be raising the presumption that these other guidelines are based upon that.
I agree completely with the Attorney General's suggestion. You have set up a sentencing structure that does certain things, and there is no need to put in the introductory section, the declaration of purpose, that the primary purpose of it is this, you know, it is the primary purpose, when that may in fact be in conflict with the constitutional provision. There's no need.
What's that got to do with my question?
In terms of the penal, in terms of putting in the specific, why put that even, I guess, requesting them, why do you have to repeat the constitutional provision in the statute?
Well, it's an old Emanuel Seller section. In Congress, which he did for about 25 years, whenever he wanted to make sure something was either constitutional or unconstitutional.
Did it work?
Yes, it did. And one particular thing is where he wanted to make sure that the new fact that we passed was unconstitutional. That would be Adam putting
And the other, I guess the other argument would be is that there is a, perhaps an argument that penal administration does not make sense. And by
But that's what I said, you know, on the floor of convention, we talked about sentencing and you know, and penitentiary and all that in the same sentence, in the same language. So,
so far, I don't mind unnecessarily putting all that direction
Okay. Well, I'll just move the amendment.
Okay, amendment number 3 has been moved. Is there any objection? Okay, amendment number 3 is adopted.
Amendment number 4.
Okay. Amendment number 4 was suggested by the Attorney General, page 5, line 11. Just to make it clear that the court has the authority to specify a period of time when specified installments to which the fine may be made. It's common practice in the courts these days. Hardly anybody has the kind of large fine, has the money to.
We don't think that's implied.
Well, I thought it was implied that the law starts, they wanted it in because to make it clear. You'll see that recommendation on.
What somebody unveiled for the Capitol Court.
No,
there's a prior section there. D is the thing starting on page 4.
Yeah.
If you recall, the payment of a fine or require the payment.
Well, yeah.
No, just
no, that's
isn't Hickey's letter, but his, but it was also at our request because it came up and we were looking at
his testimony. This is Hickey's letter, but Hickey's letter cites sections that aren't even in the statute.
What
page 7, at the very bottom. Look where you see amendment number 5.
Oh, all right.
His suggestion here cites sections that aren't even in the statute. He also, on subsection 1 on page 8, where he says, parole except under AS 3315-180B and C may not be granted. There is no section B and C of subsection 180, and 180 grants parole after the right to parole after 180 days has been served.
Let me ask a question about the subsection B. I guess that means that unless we have specifically limited the discretion, the judge's discretion, he still has it in the other area.
Yeah. That's what it means. That's what it means.
Okay. Let me ask this. What did you decide it should read on my name there, number 2? Substitute suspended for granted.
Suspended for granted. Well, you want to look at that in the statute?
No, I know what it is. I don't want to tell
you. It looks all right.
I just want to do it.
Contract.
Yeah, okay.
That's the higher drug.
Okay.
hired, or the guy who breaks the promise when he's trying to collect money for, the loan shark. The hitman.
Detection instead of it makes
before the detection was used.
Oh, I see what you mean. In other words, before they found out there was an offense for the, before they found
how
out.
About, before the offense was detected.
Wait a minute. What you're really talking about is his knowledge. Before he knew that he was going to be charged with that. Maybe there's a secret indictment out against him, but he doesn't know about it, and he went back and makes good anyway.
Thank you.
same time, he'll be trying to prove these other factors by that thing, at the same time that the prosecution is in, putting evidence in on an aggravated effect.
And clear and convincing is more than a preponderance.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, well, we've already made joyride in a film. Suppose the guy has a prior seatbelt. Now, we've also made several other things like that that are not, we've promoted several crimes. Okay, suppose you got your second joyride, or even something where they might prove the intention to the crime, but in either case, no. And the reason he grabbed the car this time is to run to the hospital to kill his bleeding again.
Or in a couple of cases, people ram the other guy in the boat, right? Well, anyway,
on the street.
Yeah, right. Mr. Chairman, the language, the language discussed at that meeting, rather than have an intent to violate, it was at that meeting, because it's unlikely that it's the same intent to violate the law.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I don't buy that. But they said that in the 200 years of litigation, or what is it, the same intent that you phrase never
do think, on reflection, I do think that your suggestion might be an appropriate place to judge the past. The defense attorney made the case that these are such extraordinary circumstances that the guy should go to the street to attend.
I really think it ought to delete it. You know, it's really going towards saying that there was some negation of one of the elements of the offense.
Yeah.
It's already been determined by the fact trier, and we're going to come in and say, no, that they weren't really right.
Okay.
Ask you to have a consent to delete.
There's no objection to amendment of Section 14 is deleted.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address Amendment 13, paragraph 13. Okay, I think, I don't often talk about policy, but I think, you know what this does? This opens it up so that the, after a guy's busted, the prosecutor can put pressure on him to go out and, you know, do whatever he wants to do, be an informant or something like that. And now, and he's got some kind of a provision here in law that if you point the guy to say you got a chance of getting less time, but there's no guarantee on it. I think it's a very dangerous situation.
How did it ever get in here, Doug? How did it ever get in here in the first place?
Well, he suggested it, and the chairman signed off on it. So I just wanted to make that reference. I think it's a real poor policy to give the prosecutor the opportunity to do that when the guy can't be necessarily guaranteed. Telling him to grant immunity when he can't actually grant it.
Just a moment. What are you saying? Are you saying that they're going to get quick confessions out of people because they'll say, well, we'll take care of your boys? Now, that's not really what it says.
No, no.
It says you're going to get a sentence anyway. Who are these other guys?
I think you ought to know what you're doing, because what it does is, after the guys are arrested, if it gives it, you know, the prosecutor can come in and say, okay, if you be an informant and if you get an opportunity to get less time, then you can't guarantee the guy's going to get less time. So I think it's a tool that can be abused.
Well,
I don't know.
I wasn't coming from your angle, but I thought of it was saying that if you're an informer, and even though you may be a third felon, there's going to be a mitigating factor that you're an informer. See, I didn't view it like you did, though.
Yeah.
I didn't view it as a tool to use. But think of what you're saying. You're saying that we consider you a better person in for sentencing purposes because you snitched on your friends. And even though it had no relationship to the offense you're being sentenced for.
Well, you know, they've got laws about snitching on their friends in regard to accomplices and a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, there's way too much of this kind of...
Yes, but it's applicable to that offense. It's applicable to the offense that, you know, you're being prosecuted for. This says that if you have a history of being an undercover agent, say, for example, in drug offenses, if you are later arrested for a murder, has nothing to do with drug offenses. It's a mitigating factor. It should make it, what it says is the status of an informer is a mitigating factor, even though it's not related to the offense. That's what bothered me, though.
Yeah,
if I
well, that's
right,
yeah, okay. You know, I didn't think of that.
This is not tied down to...
become informer 10 years before.
Right.
Yes. Now, you could say to another person, you could, of course, limit it to the specific offense.
Contemporaneously with the
other person with him, you know, as an accomplice or the party to the crime.
Commentary would be covered by this because you uncover offenses committed by other persons or the detective apprehended a person.